that we would keep a full-time job and that we would spend a lot of our time on art things and to do traveling, looking at everything. I went to the European Court to defend our rights. We collected painting work on paper, posters, everything, not only painting. And we actually came in contact with a lot of artists. And that was also very nice.
Hallo, ich begrüße Sie ganz herzlich zu unserer neuen Folge von Talking Heads, dem Podcast der Weserburg. Mein Name ist Anne Thurmann-Jahjes. Ich bin die Leiterin des Zentrums für Künstlerpublikationen in der Weserburg und auch die Kuratorin der Ausstellung Monochromie zur Ästhetik publizierter Kunst. Als meinen Gast begrüße ich José Brocken-Seib aus den Niederlanden, die mit ihrer Brocken-Seib Foundation of Modern and Contemporary Art diese Ausstellung großzügig gefördert hat. Welcome, José. I'm delighted that you are here and we are doing this podcast together.
I am glad to be in Bremen for the exhibition and have this discussion with you.
Yeah, that's great. Das Gespräch führen wir auf Englisch, da ich leider kein Niederländisch spreche und José auch nur wenig Deutsch. Und dann ist es doch einfacher, auf Englisch zu sprechen. Wir werden ein wenig über José Brocken-Seib sprechen, insbesondere aber über die Kunst, die Sammlung von Künstlerpublikationen und die wunderbare Schenkung, die sie dem Zentrum für Künstlerpublikationen vor 2 Jahren gemacht hat. Und natürlich wird auch die Ausstellung Monochromie zur Ästhetik publizierter Kunst unser Thema sein. Soweit dazu. José, we met the first time at the opening of an exhibition at the Stedelijk van Abbe Museum in Eindhoven. Later, I was able to see your wonderful collection. You and Hans, you shared a passion that's contemporary art. How did you get into art and how did you start collecting contemporary art in the mid-80s?
Hans and I had decided a long time ago to go to the university in Leiden to get an academic level degree. And because we came there at 1963 and Hans decided to study history and I decided to study chemistry. Of course, quite different areas in different parts of the university never met each other then. But later on, we met each other at a lecture of a professor from Amsterdam about contemporary art. And then we found out that we were the only persons which are doing a completely different study than the rest of the people present there, namely visual art study. So we started to talk with each other, and later on we met each other several times. And actually, in 1965, we became a couple, and we stayed for quite a long time together, and actually till Hans died in 2018. So we were almost 50 years together then, after our marriage. And our marriage happened in 1969, just before I finished my study. And Hans himself had just finished his history, got a doctoral degree with a cum laude, and I was capable to do the same 6 months later with a summa cum laude for my doctoral chemistry. But the art, we had it already at the university, yeah, because of the meeting. And we already decided, before we finished our doctoral, that we would keep a full-time job and that we would spend a lot of our time, free time, apart from the full-time job, on art things. And to do traveling, looking at everything.
Okay. Yes, and just very interesting. As a chemist, you worked later in research at the energy company of Shell in the Netherlands. What was it like to work in this company as a young woman in the 1970s? And what was the situation for women in the contemporary and in society?
Yes, it was still very difficult. And I found out when I asked for a job in Shell, a special research, but also outside, I got several offers. But then I heard that because I was a married woman, I was not allowed to enter the pension of Shell. And I was amazed, and I said to one of the directors who interviewed me, I said, yes, but it is impossible. I expected that Shell, as an international company, would follow European law. And there was a new European law in 1974, which forbade the countries working on the European Union to make a difference when people wanted to work between men and women. No. So I didn't know at that time, but the Netherlands always made any change. They never accepted almost any European law, and they had actually found another way to do it. But okay, I said that, and I said also, I don't want to come to you when you don't accept this possibility for me. And I changed as the first woman, married woman, I was capable to change it. They wanted to change it because they want to have me very gladly. So that was a real important point for me. So I accepted the job. And the research center in Amsterdam was very modern, because 64 people from different countries were working there. So it was very modern. So I liked it very much and was very glad that I left Philips, which mainly was Dutch yet.
Yes. And you once also went to the court of the European Court?
Yes.
For women's rights?
Yes. I found out around 1990 that I still was almost the only married woman inside Shell which had a pension right. I also observed that there would be a major change, and that almost all the married women who had a job there were working on a temporary contract without knowing it, and that it would include that they could not get any handshake when they left the company or get any unemployment payment by the government. So we started to fight against it. That happened to be in all the larger companies in the Netherlands, also working for all different types. And we formed a group fighting it. But the problem was then, because of the specific situation in the Netherlands, that you first have to do the Dutch court to get permission to go to the European court to get permission to have it. And I was the only one with the group I formed. I started Barber Group, and I got a very good support from an accountant, woman accountant in Amsterdam, and she helped me to defend for the Dutch court that I wanted to go to European court. And I was the only one which got in permission. The rest was did not accept. So there were a lot of people. So I went 2 years later, because that is always a bureaucratic happening, as everybody knows now, still now. I went to the European court to defend our rights, not only on the actual retirement date, but also on other aspects. And we were very happy that we could get most of the results out of it against Shell. So everybody was directly put on a permanent contract, got pension right, building up. And that was very important, because later on, about 15,000 people were sent away in the Netherlands to leave Shell. And because of the women had the same right, they got the same handshakes and everything. So that was very good. So actually it was quite a success, but it was very difficult to get it. It was a lot of time I involved in it. And I did quite other things in Holland to improve the role of women in society.
Yes.
Okay, but we can talk later on about it.
It's too much. Yes, but maybe you're going to add, you work also in other areas outside research in Shell. And had this an impact of collecting art for you? You were traveling international.
Initially, I had a job responsible for hiring academic people for Shell for about 3 years in personnel. I was the member of the personnel department. And later on, I got an own small group which looked at the strategy and certain part of the Shell business international, and I became international staff. And in that case, I worked together with the central office in London and also with Harvard University in the United States. And I liked it very much because I found that these countries were far ahead in respect to the Netherlands, giving opportunities to well-qualified women. And then when we started to collect our art in the Netherlands, we initially started on Dutch art, but we did quite disappointed about the results we got very soon. So for me, it was very easy to move to another area. So we started already in 1990 to decide to go to international art and to build up an international collection focusing on large other countries in Europe and America especially, to make a collection. Yeah? And it was not so difficult for me. I had so many international contacts. Hans less, but for him it became also very easy. So no problem. And because he had already some international contact, because he finished his PhD in 1982, a little bit later, but he did it next to his work. So it was also quite a success for him.
In the 80s, you also came in contact with artist publications, and if I remember correctly, started collecting them in 1988. And what fascinates you about artist publication and artist books in particular? What is the main focus on your collection?
The question we had when we went over for the first time, for instance, to Art Basel, there were 5,000 artists. We want to collect contemporary art, which is about 20 to 30,000 work to show. So we were thinking, how do we choose that? We had bought already Herman de Vries, which lived outside the Netherlands already from 68 onwards. But we wanted to know, get better information, and we found very soon that artist books, when you looked at it, was very good when you follow it in time, that you could much better understand what artists were looking for. Much better than in general, the general literature about art developments, because it was focused, so that it makes it much more easier for you to decide which artists are of interest. And had no interest to build up a very expensive, we only wanted to collect art because of interest in the thinking of the artist and what he tried to say about really contemporary art. And that appeared to be marvelous. So we spent actually a lot of time also to look around. But we found out very soon that the quality, although there was no claim for it, appeared to be quite different. And of course, most of artists trying out things in the artist book had the habit to change it, to try out a few things when they don't like some part. So I decided to buy artist books only after seeing it and only at certain places in the world. Yeah? And we followed actually the same with other things. We collected painting work on paper, posters, everything. Not only painting. And we actually came in contact by a lot of artists. And that was also a very nice life.
Yes, yes, I can believe. And going on, 1990, yeah, was the year in which you also founded a company. What was that already in view of the fact that you wanted to open a gallery, which you did in 1995 in your house in Bentveld? Was there a relationship?
Yes, there was a relationship, because the reason to found a small gallery inside our house was that our friends wanted to have the same art as we had, but they asked us to buy for them. Now, I think when you really have to buy contemporary art, it's so personal. And therefore, we thought, we cannot do that. We cannot buy art for somebody who's never seen their art. So we decided to make a contract, and contract also, with different galleries outside the Netherlands, to show some exhibitions of art, which we offered when they wanted some artwork of a certain... Said, look self, and you can buy it if you want it. And we had both then very good job. But of course, at a certain moment, we were thinking, how long do we want to stay? When you become older, there is always that question. Do we want to stay at the same company, or do we want to have another type of job? Now, Hans was offered in 1996. And before that, actually, we thought maybe we leave the both companies in time. And I had a retiring age of 55. So that was already close by. So we decided to start our company already in 1990. And we realized that it need to be there when we wanted to retire or leave our country, our job. Yeah.
Okay. Yet, but the official gallery only opened then in Limte in 2001. And did the gallery have a special program at that time?
Yes, they opened after we have bought a completely new house. I was retired from Shell, and Hans got his early pension rights, which is a nice, very nice handshake. So he decided that he wanted to start the gallery, and I was offered to become professor at the University in Eindhoven in my specialization in which I built up in Shell on research in technology and nanoscience. That was the best, and we bought a new house, and we had a nice house, large house with a large shell, and we spent 1 year to repair the gallery part of the house, and then we focused on bringing art, because we had also not the money. We were mainly focusing on bringing artists we liked ourselves very much, first of all. And secondly, to introduce foreign art inside the Netherlands. So focusing on international art from outside Europe and well as America. Yeah, which was very exceptional in the Netherlands.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so, and the next step, so following your life, then you worked on the establishment of the Brocken Seib Foundation of Modern and Contemporary Art for 3 years, until the starting point of the foundation in 2011. And that was the next step. And what was the purpose of this foundation?
We found out, the main reason to start with it, was we found out that we never have collected any art because we wanted to sell it later on or so. We were thinking of giving it to our friends later on. But then we found out that the prices went up very quickly, very high in price, so that there would be a reason to see if it would not be much more interesting to offer it to musea in Europe and in the Netherlands, because then the artist may become quite popular, and that would be of great help. And because to have that, we already knew that it would be very difficult to do something like that because of the difficulties with the Dutch law on art. They never followed still in that time the law of European Community. So we spent 2.5 years to construct a foundation which would be made possible to work together with foreign countries and offer, if we wanted, to donate the art there. And that was, it was after 3 years accepted, ultimately, and that we could do this as one of the few exceptions. Of most of the collectors never get it, but we got it. And we got an ambi status, which we needed to make it possible, according to the Dutch law. Yeah?
Yes, you are very successful in this kind.
Yes, but it was hardworking, I must say. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have built a very significant art collection, yeah. And since the mid 1980s, so it's great. And are there any criteria that particularly important that were particularly important for you?
Now, what when we looked around to buy really contemporary art made for only 2-3 years before, at maximum, we found that it was a very strong focus. On, apart from artist book, also on color and also on installations. And that we found very new ways by in different, not only in painting, but also in other forms of art, that people used in a very new way color. And the reason for that, it was quite different. Of course, as Dutch, having a Dutch background, the style always discussed use of a limited amount of colors, 5, but the colors we found were much more broader, much more variable, much more interesting from some point of view with new ideas. So one large part, we bought most of it in USA, locally, quite often in New York, and sometimes also outside in Switzerland, was also quite another source. And the rest, basically, was a small part still Dutch, which we still liked. And the other large part was outside Netherlands, Belgium, France, Germany, Switzerland, and so on. Yeah?
Yes, that's...
But a line of two main things, color-related and installation-related.
Oh, yes. And I have to say, I was very delighted that you, also on behalf of Hans, donated 3 important collections to the Weserburg for the Center for Artist Publication, that's the collection Hermann de Vries, the Dutch collection, and the collection Daniel Götting. Can you briefly say something about these collections and how did they come about?
Yes, I think we started actually with Herman de Vries, bought our first work in 1992, and we liked his work. Most of the people in the Netherlands didn't, but we liked his work very much. And now we collected, contacting him, we bought a lot. We found out that he has published a huge amount of artist books, but we also liked his work. Not so much as very earlier, but later on also. And especially on color. When he started to use earth, which was collected by his friends of 8,000 samples all over the world. And we bought several times work of him based on that. That is for, so we continued collecting work of him every time we found something which was of interesting. Dutch collection, we became more and more interested in an earlier develop and how the historical development went on in the Netherlands. So we started later on to focus partly on the style, early style period, what the influence had later on in the Dutch art published. And also on Cobra initially, quite heavily. That was a reason, so that is large part, including also a lot of concrete poetry, not only from visual artists, but also of poets. Yeah? Worldwide also, but also connected with the Dutch artists. Huh? So, for instance, the Dutch poet. And Dutch, but also on, for instance, American poetry as Barry and so on. Huh? Yeah? So we collected it everywhere. We bought it on different places also. And Daniel Götting is another story. We met him before he even had a gallery. We met him because we had a contact with a collector in Brazil. And we saw his work in his own house. And then we were directly enthusiastic, partly because of the way he used his material, a typical industrial-oriented material, but also he was very strongly already involved in installation type of approaches, which I liked very much. More or less the third, fourth dimension, which is part of the Dutch style later on, especially bij Theo van Doesburg.
Yes, and we are very happy to have these three collections now in the inventory of the Center for Artist Publication. What is great.
So we collected from him from the beginning of 88 onwards, we've bought until the end.
And some of the works from your collection are now also being shown in the exhibition Monochromie. Maybe I say a little bit about it. The exhibition Monochromie on the Aesthetics of Published Art shows the different ways in which contemporary artists deal with color. Color is incredibly diverse, and the exhibition features works by over 60 artists who, on the one hand, deal directly with monochromie and, on the other, have developed artistic aesthetic practices influenced by monochromie. And the artist dealt with aspects of absolute abstraction about emotion, color, and emptiness, as well as the philosophical and religious understanding of nothingness. So that's very fantastic also to see in the exhibition. And but to ask you, does color in the monochrome have a special significance in your collection, and why you and Hans decide to collect it?
Now, I think it was, for both of us, was very important. Initially, Hans was a little bit more classical in his choice, but later on became more and more enthusiastic about artists, and especially about color, because of some of the use of color, because of some of the works, for instance, of Americans, because there was very strong group of artists in America which did a lot of experiments with colors. So that was one reason. And the other reason is when I look, for instance, what is in the exhibition, for instance, we found out that also in the Netherlands there were a few artists which used very interesting new ways of color. One was there, of course, Herman de Vries with his work of on art, using his art samples. But the other one was Nan Groot-Anting, which actually used nature to make her own painting and made in a very special way interesting, sometimes with overlaying, printed way, a lot of layers. So that was an important part, and we have collected her. And also George Mertens, which was more, much more, he used also different colors, but he was more driven by philosophy and philosophical thinking behind it. So that was typical. You can see that in the exhibition. Of course, we had some very early works with white van Herman de Vries, and also of Art Dekkers. We always liked Art Dekkers very much as an artist in the Netherlands. He made several artist books. They are shown with white in Netherlands. But also, what is in the exhibition now, is the white earth, which Herman de Vries used from everywhere in the world to making the cereal-oriented work. So that are a few examples which you can see from our collection inside the Monochrome exhibition.
Yeah, and it's so unbelievable that he made white paintings from white earth, and where to find white earth. Yeah. So it's great also to see. So the works of the exhibition for that came from 6 different archives and collections from the Center for Artist Publication, and you see, supplemented by many loans from the collection of the Brock and Seip Foundation of Art and from other private collections. The works, and what you also can see here in the exhibition, the works from the holdings of the Center for Artist Publication and the Brock and Seip Foundation, they complement each other in a perfect way, so that's always great to see. And now I would like to thank you, José, for this conversation. It was nice, it was great, and for the wonderful donation again, and for supporting the exhibition Monochromie zur Ästhetik publizierter Kunst. Many thanks for you. Und zum Schluss gehe ich nochmal ins Deutsche über. Ich möchte ganz herzlich Jonas Rahm und Vanessa Rolfing danken für die Unterstützung bei diesem Podcast. Vielen Dank.